Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Mythbusters. What is happening and what is not happening at the Synod on the Family in the Vatican? Dan Berg talks to Mark Brumley from Ignatius Press. Also, what would you say to the bishops at the Synod right now if you could talk to them? Jeanette DeMello talks to Hilary Towers, one of the 48 scholars and marriage advocates who sent an open letter to the Synod Fathers. Welcome to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Elena Rodriguez, sitting in this week for Tom Price. He is elsewhere, working on a special broadcast. The editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, Jeanette DeMello, will lead our second interview. But first, the Register's executive director, Dan Berg, will start us off. Thank you both, Jeanette and Dan, for being on this week's show. Our first guest is Mark Brumley, the Chief Executive Officer for Ignatius Press. He also oversees the online magazines for Ignatius Press, and he is Project Coordinator for the Ignatius Catholic Study Bible. Mark joins us to talk about the first week of the Synod on the Family going on in the Vatican. Mark Brumley, welcome to Register Radio.
Always great to be with you.
Dan?
Mark, thanks again. It's really so important to the Church in understanding of the family, of proper view of sexuality and marriage. And so the Church is concerned about this as well and has initiated an extraordinary synod of bishops considering marriage, family, life, and sexuality. Tell us who's meeting and what they're meeting about in specific.
All right. Well, this is the Synod of Bishops, and it's a regular meeting of leaders among the bishops from around the world to get together to talk about pastoral issues related to the life and mission of the Church. That's really a development coming out of the Second Vatican Council, where bishops would exercise what's called collegiality, you know, from like the word college. They're like a team, and the Synod of Bishops is one way in which the team quality of the bishops united with the Pope, the Bishop of Rome, you know, can be manifest. So it's leaders from Episcopal conferences, that is to say, you know, conferences of bishops from various countries around the world, other people involved in the Vatican and various offices in the Vatican related to the subject of family, and marriage and things of that sort. And then there are some lay people from various ministries and works concerning marriage and family life all gathered together. This is an extraordinary synod. That just doesn't mean it's, you know, special, although it is special. It's an extraordinary synod in that it's not in the usual sequence. It was called by the Holy Father to prepare for the ordinary synod, which is going to be next year on the topic of the family. So he called an extraordinary synod to get people together to have some discussion, even some debate, in order to prepare for the following year's ordinary synod of bishops.
Now, Mark, preceding the start of the synod, there's been a great deal of, how would you put it, public rancor and debate and anxiety among various corners of the Church. Much of it, in my opinion, stirred up by Cardinal Walter Casper, who has proposed some radical things regarding marriage that I frankly find disturbing, and he claims that they're rooted in the gospel, but frankly, I could see St. Paul arguing with him in clear and stark terms on some of the things that he's put forward. But he's put out some ideas about what marriage should look like and how we should deal with divorce and that sort of thing. And then there have been another group of cardinals who have, through Ignatius, published their opinions. Of course, Cardinal Casper called that political maneuvering, but yet his weighing in is just part of the dialogue, which I frankly found outrageous. But why don't, if you could, cast a little bit of the both sides of the debate, and then let's talk about what you're doing at Ignatius to bring clarity to Church teaching on these matters.
Okay, let's give some context. The Synod that we are in the midst of now is on the family, on marriage, and what the new evangelization has to say about it. And that's a very broad topic. Lots of issues related to family life, to marriage, the breakdown of marriage, divorce, remarriage, people cohabitating, people in some parts of the world, the Church is faced with the challenge of polygamy. That's not something we generally have here in the West, at least not yet. But some places in the world, that's an issue. So there are lots. There's the question of poverty, the impact of unemployment on family life, and the pressures that, that unemployment brings to bear on marriage. All of these things are issues that have to do with the church and the church's promotion of marriage and family. So that's the broad background. Now, in the middle of that, or in the midst of that, there is a discussion about what do you do with civilly remarried Catholics. That is to say, Catholics who were married in the church, they get a divorce, they don't get an annulment, and instead they go out and they get remarried civilly, and they want to continue to practice the Catholic faith and so on. It's a relatively small group of people. From all of the hubbub in the debate, you'd think there were huge numbers of people in this situation. It's a relatively small number of people, but it's nevertheless an important number of people, and how you deal with that question has ramifications for a lot of other things related to marriage and family. Now, Cardinal Casper has for some time now, for decades actually, been proposing that under certain circumstances, civilly remarried Catholics who have not gotten a declaration of nullity, in other words, the church has not found that their first marriage, what looked like a marriage, wasn't really a marriage, that for some time, that some select group of this group of people should be permitted, or at least Cardinal Casper said we should consider the possibility of giving them Holy Communion, and that Holy Communion meaning that they are, you know, in full communion with the church and so on. And he's got various other proposals he makes based upon his reading of how the practice in the Eastern Orthodox churches has developed. All right, he's been promoting this for quite some time. Pope Francis became aware of it, thought that it would be worthwhile having Cardinal Casper address the consistory, which is the College of Cardinals, in February to present his perspective on it so that the cardinals could discuss the matter. Now, of course, three-quarters of Cardinal Casper's presentation had nothing to do with the subject of communion for civilly divorced remarried Catholics. It was only about the last quarter of it that really kind of engaged that issue. And by all reports, there was a lot of pushback from the College of Cardinals. Many of the cardinals said, well, you know, we want to be compassionate and merciful. We try to be understanding, but we can't treat this civil union, civil remarriage, as if it were a marriage in the Catholic Church, and as if these folks, however well-intentioned they may be, are living in a way that's consistent with the teaching of Jesus. They simply aren't. They may think they are. They may intend to. They may have all kinds of subjective, you know, reasons for why they are where they are. But nevertheless, in terms of what they're actually doing, that's at odds with the teaching of Jesus, and we can't give on that. Well, that was the pushback that several cardinals gave. And then Cardinal Casper, coming out of the consistory, proceeded to continue to do interviews and even published his talk in the form of a book with his proposals out there calling for a greater discussion and conversation about this. Well, along comes Cardinal Burke and several other cardinals. We have five cardinals who, along with some other contributors, including an archbishop, looked at the arguments that Cardinal Casper presented and addressed the concerns that he raised. And they did this in the form of a book called Remaining in the Truth of Christ. Now, they're focused mainly on the question of civilly remarried Catholics who haven't gotten an annulment, who want to receive Holy Communion. But as they argue, many of the same principles that Cardinal Casper invokes to make allowances for this group of people, it's hard to limit to them. It could you could extend these principles to cohabitating couples, people who aren't married at all, and all sorts of other relationships. So they're raising some concern. They go back and they look at the biblical evidence. They look at the teaching of the early church fathers, including some places that Cardinal Casper cites in support of his position, and they show how, in fact, a careful reading of those texts actually contradicts Cardinal Casper's position, and a number of other things. So that's this book, Remaining in the Truth of Christ. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I can understand Cardinal Casper, you know, had five prominent cardinals take him up on his offer to discuss the issue, and they published a book. And now he feels, apparently, based on what he said in interviews, he feels like he's being ganged up upon. Well, I can understand how he might feel that way, but nevertheless, it was he who called for a debate, a discussion, a conversation about these things. And I think, you know, an objective reader, if you sat down and you read Remaining in the Truth of Christ, I think you'd come away with the fact that all of those cardinals, all of those contributors are very charitable to Cardinal Casper. They don't denounce him. They don't say he's a heretic. They do say that they have difficulty seeing how you can square what he's advocating, at least some of what he's advocating, with the teaching of the church, which is really the teaching of Jesus, and the pastoral experience of the church over the last 2,000 years. So they do have a problem with what he says, but they're very charitable, and they you know, assume the best of motives on his part for why he says what he says. There's also the issue that they feel like he's somewhat inconsistent. And some things he says they wholeheartedly agree with, and other things seem to be not only in contradiction with what the church has practiced over the years, but even in contradiction with what Cardinal Casper himself says elsewhere. So that's sort of the background behind this controversy, and you know, I don't think we should be bashful. I mean, we should do all these things in charity, but this was a public position that Cardinal Casper took. He published a book on the subject. He gave many interviews on the subject, and he called for conversation and dialogue. He really shouldn't be critical of cardinals who disagree with him, who frame very charitable and thoughtful arguments. You know, this business of characterizing people who disagree as trying to change the gospel into a penal code, or, you know, being part of a theologically closed system, I can understand how, you know, you make a proposal in a public way and it kind of gets critiqued. You might tend to react that way, but that kind of reaction, you know, isn't really contributive to bringing the conversation along and to furthering the dialogue.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're speaking with Mark Bremley, president of Ignatius Press, about the Extraordinary Synod on the Family. So, Mark, tell me again the name of the books that you are publishing.
Well, we're publishing four books related to the themes of the Synod, three of which are, you know, more directly on that theme. The Remaining in the Truth of Christ book, edited by Father Dodaro, he deals with this question of divorce and remarriage and civil and communion for civilly remarried Catholics. The other two books, The Gospel of the Family and The Hope of the Family, are broader in their conversation about what the issues are facing family. They also deal with the question of communion for civilly divorced and remarried Catholics, but they're dealing with lots of other issues too. And what are the, you know, how do we avoid the problem of divorce? What do we do with family breakdown? Things of that sort. So, The Gospel of the Family is written by Father Perez Soba and Stefan Kampowski, and has a foreword by Cardinal Pell. Very good foreword. Cardinal Pell's foreword is worth the price of the book by itself. And then The Hope of the Family is really a conversation with Cardinal Gerhard Müller. Cardinal Müller is the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, the office that Pope Benedict had before he became Pope. And this really is, as I say, it's a kind of a conversation, kind of a pastoral conversation about how to address the issues related to family life today. I mentioned three books. People can want to find out more about those can go to Ignatius.com or to a special website we've created called GospelOfTheFamily.com, GospelOfTheFamily.com. The fourth book is being released in association with the beatification of Pope Paul VI, which is going to happen at the end of the Synod, and that is a book-length edition, special edition, of Humanae Vitae, Pope Paul VI's famous encyclical that dealt with the issue of contraception and marital love, and it's called On Human Life, and it has contributions by Mary Eberstadt, who wrote the book Adam and Eve After the Pill, which is a scrutiny of the issue of contraception, and James Hitchcock, the Catholic historian, and Jennifer Fulweiler, who's a convert from atheism, and how she grappled with this teaching about marital love and, you know, procreation and family life and so on, and how she came to embrace the Church's teaching in opposition to contraception. So those are some of the resources that we have created in connection with the Synod, some dealing with very specific issues like communion for civilly remarried Catholics or use of contraception. Others are much broader in terms of evangelization and the gospel of the family and how we need to take the teaching of Pope John Paul II and apply that in converting our families and our marriages so that we can further the work of the Church in the world.
Mark Bremley, it's great to have you with us on Register Radio. We're so grateful for the work that you do at Ignatius Press and how you constantly hold up the truths of the faith in ways that reach all aspects of the Church, whether you're in the pews or in academia, whatever it is, you're doing a great work. We appreciate you. We're going to include all the links that you provided in books that you are offering on this on our summary of this on at ncregister.com. And that'll be available once folks hear the show. So thanks again for being with us, Mark. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for Register Radio, for the Register, and for EWTN.
And thank you both, Dan Burke and Mark Bremley. When we return, what would you say to the bishops in the Vatican meeting for the Synod on the Family right now if you could talk to them? We talked to Dr. Hilary Towers, who got together with others and actually wrote a letter to them. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. We'll be right back.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, provider and protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. Along with Dan Burke and Jeanette Mello, I'm Elena Rodriguez, sitting in this week for Tom Price. He's working on a special broadcast and will be back with us very soon. The Register's editor-in-chief, Jeanette Mello, will conduct our next interview. Our first guest is Dr. Hilary Towers. She's a developmental psychologist and mother of 5 children. She writes about marriage and spousal abandonment, especially as those issues are treated within the Catholic Church. She joins us on Register Radio as one of the 48 scholars and marriage advocates who sent an open letter to the Synod Fathers. The letter talks about the advice of the experts about divorce and cohabitation and how to promote lifelong, healthy, and faithful marriages. Dr. Hilary, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jeanette?
Hilary, in the months leading up to the Synod on Marriage and Family, there's been a lot of discussion about what the focus of the Synod should be, the divorced and remarried, the issue of communion, and whether they can receive communion or not. But that certainly is not what concerns most people when they think about the state of marriage and the family today. You've put together a project that highlights these important issues. Tell us about what this project is.
I should start by noting that I am not the sole author of this letter. I co-wrote it with my dad, who happens to be the director of the Religious Freedom Project, which is out of a center in Georgetown University that looks at international religious freedom trends. And some of your listeners might be thinking, well, what does that have to do with this, you know, marriage crisis? The letter is a call to action to all of us in the church, not just to the bishops who will be attending the synod, although they, of course, are in a unique position to sort of help get going some of the proposals that we're making in the letter. But it's really a call to action for each one of us. And it's a call to stand up and defend the marriage bond by embracing and participating in certain strategies that we propose as a foundation, in the hope that some of these strategies will work toward the goals of reducing cohabitation and divorce rates, but also just strengthening marriages and families around the world. So the letter has been signed by 48 international scholars and marriage advocates, people from all over the globe who care very deeply about these issues and wanted to take the opportunity to let others know that. And many of them have been working on these issues that are addressed in the letter their entire careers. One in particular I can think of who signed on early was Dr. Marianne Glendon, who's a Harvard Law professor and actually former ambassador to the Holy See. Certainly, she's had a long, distinguished career sort of fighting for the principles that underlie a lot of the proposals that we've made, and I would say particularly in the area of family law. We have a lot of university professors who signed on to the letter, people from all over Chile, Spain, Australia, Colombia, Hungary, and we also have people who are really doing the hard work on the ground, like Greg and Julie Alexander.
You've put together a letter. You've helped to put together a letter. You've sent it to the Synod Fathers, and you hope that this will stir conversation and action throughout the world, because all of these people who've signed it are throughout the world. What actually does the letter say?
The theme of the Synod is the pastoral challenges of the family in the context of evangelization. One of the main goals of the Synod is to provide pastoral or spiritual guidance to the faithful on church teachings on marriage, and then help us live out those teachings in some ways, that reference to evangelization, this is something the Pope really makes a focus in his work, is perfectly applied to the main theme of our letter, which is that we need to encourage the formation of small communities of faithful, lifelong marriages in which families and friends and churches hold spouses accountable for their marriage vows. So, in other words, we're kind of recreating what used to exist naturally at the level of the family. The role of the immediate and even extended family has been to really buffer and support and protect marriages in the family. And they do that in a variety of ways, but one of the ways that they do that is to, when one spouse, for instance, starts to get off track, there's this, what I've come to call, positive peer pressure. The family steps in and says, no, we love you. Because we love you, we love your marriage. We're going to encourage you in every way we can to step back in line with the norms of married life, and we're going to help you, you know, get the help you need as a couple. What's happened now is that sort of support is virtually, I mean, at every level of society, the family, peer networks. And so what we have now is a situation where when couples are struggling, we sort of turn a blind eye. In the name, I think a lot of times we do that with a sort of a false sense of privacy. Mm-hmm. We think, oh, this isn't any of our business. There must be things going on there that we don't understand. The reality is, and I think this is where the Synod could do so much good, if we could really focus on this message, and I think the Pope hit on it in his homily during the wedding he did for those 20 couples, it is a journey. We are all on a journey together, and we need each other. We need to support each other as married couples in our vocations. That's a major theme that runs throughout the letter. There are different proposals that we make that people can read, but it's all sort of toward the end of creating these communities of strong marriages.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very important thing for us to focus on as we follow what's going on in the Synod. We definitely want to make sure that what comes out of the Synod actually affects our lives and doesn't just stay in a document. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Hilary Towers, who's helped put together an open letter to the Synod Fathers, asking them to reflect on some very important facts and ideas about marriage and family. So, Hilary, one of the things that you wrote in a commentary for the Register was about this wedding that you mentioned. It happened back in September at the Vatican, and it was 20 couples who were at a mass with the Holy Father, and these couples were in very irregular situations. There was some media hype around this. The blogosphere was lit up with discussions around these couples, but there was one thing that was said in a news release in Rome: those who will get married Sunday are couples like many others. So they were in irregular circumstances. There was a lot of hubbub about them being at the Vatican Mass. But the fact of the matter is that that's what many couples look like today. And you had a bunch of statistics in this commentary that actually outlines the state of marriage today. Maybe you could point out just a couple of those statistics.
Sure. Well, the narrative about divorce, for those who follow it in social science, has been in the past few decades that the divorce rate basically stabilized in the late 80s, and that it's even started to decline in the general population. But there was actually a study that came out this month in the journal Demography, which showed that because of really massive, substantial flaws in the data sets that our social scientists have been relying upon, and because they haven't been taking into account the age composition, changes in age composition of the population of married people. The bottom line is we've drastically underestimated divorce levels. So the whole narrative about it, you know, sort of leveling off and not being such a problem anymore is false. And it's actually, as you might imagine, it's the baby boomers who are driving this trend. They were the ones who divorced in very large numbers in the 1980s, and now they've remarried and they're divorcing again because, as you probably know, divorce rates rise sharply with each successive remarriage.
That's right.
So we have middle-aged and older people who are continuing to divorce. We have the so-called millennial generation, usually people under 30, young adults, who are rightly cynical. They've experienced the effects of, divorce personally, many of them. They've seen one parent or both walk out on the vow that they made to each other. And so they want nothing to do with that. And I think we have to sort of, as a church, we have to be honest with ourselves and sort of take responsibility for why that is the case. It's a very sad situation, but they're choosing to cohabit. And they're having children out of wedlock. And I think, you know, this brings us back around to sort of the theme of the letter. These young people in particular, they need to see role models for marriage. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to look like it did in the past, because there's just so much brokenness in our families that we almost have to sort of artificially recreate these communities. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be necessarily family members who are serving as role models anymore. But, you know, one interesting paradigm for this is what Greg and Julie Alexander are doing. They're setting up parish-based communities which serve this function precisely. They are mentors, basically, in the church. That's mature right. Men and women who've been married, they've been through the ups and downs of marriage, that they're committed. And I That's think right. there's such a need for this. Now, especially even with regard to, there are just so many married couples who are isolated. You know, they're not even if their families are loving and wonderful, they're isolated from them geographically. They don't that's have right. that support that they need. So that's what we've got to work toward. We've got to provide that kind of support.
Well, it's wonderful, again, as I said before, to have this conversation, to look at the reality of what is, and to hope for what we might do to change. But all of us need to be a part of this conversation. And so, Hillary, I thank you so much for being a part of this discussion, for helping to organize this open letter to the Synod Fathers. And I do hope that that the Synod touches all of our lives in some special way. So thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Jeanette.
And thank you both, Jeanette DeMello and Dr. Hillary Towers. Don't forget, you can listen to the show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen and also to download the show. On behalf of Dan Burke, Jeanette DeMello, Tom Price, Mark Brumley, and Dr. Hillary Towers, and all of us here at the Register and at EWTN Radio, thank you for joining us. This is Elena Rodriguez, and we will be here again next week for more of Register Radio.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.